We've been doing a series here on Sunday nights about community, about getting on together. And tonight is the last in the series. And next week we want to start a new series, just a three-week series, a pre-Christmas one on myths we live by. And next week is going to be on if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. But tonight, we're all about leadership, because we're talking about how to get on well together and about community. And the one thing that all communities of any sort need if they're to function well is they need good leaders. Now, I guess a lot of us, at various times in our life, we end up finding that we're leaders. Sometimes you may not have sought this, but you suddenly find it may be at work, it may be in your recreational life, it may be here at church or somewhere else. You find you're a leader. And people are looking to you for inspiration and this kind of stuff. Being a leader is a very, very difficult task. And sooner or later, I guess an awful lot of us, at some stage in our lives, will end up leaders. And we face this whole challenge of how do you lead? What is it to be a leader? What do leaders look like? And the problem is that when you find yourself in a leadership role, you find you get all sorts of advice. Some people will come to you and say, now look, what we need around here, we need strong leadership. And you think, yeah, that's right, we do. And so you're juggling this in your mind, you're seeing this. So the next person comes to you and they say, you know what we need? We need a leader who listens to others. And you think, yeah, that's right, we do. So we need to be strong for a leader. We need to be listening to others. Yeah. And then the next person comes to you and they say, you know what we need around here? We need a leader who can tough things out when the going gets difficult. And you think, yeah, that's true. That's a real attribute of a leader. So I've got to be tough, and I've got to be tender, and I've got to listen to other people, and I've got to tough it out. And then the next person comes and says, you know what I most admire in a leader? I want someone who's vulnerable and shares their weakness and their pain and their struggles so I can relate to them. You think, that's true, isn't it? So I've got to be tough, and I've got to listen to other people, and I've got to keep affirming them, and I've got to tough it out in the difficult times, and I've got to be vulnerable and share all my pain and my weakness and so on. And you know, by the time you've listened to all this stuff, you are very, very confused. And all that stuff is being said. And sometimes it's being said by a whole bunch of people all at the same time. And so here you are in the workplace, or in your sporting life, or at church, or wherever it is, you're a leader, and you face this whole confusing package of advice that you get these days on what it means to be a good leader. And what are you supposed to do? There's a real problem, because most of our societies today are suffering from a dreadful lack of real inspirational leaders. There aren't many around. That's part of the problem. And so it's hard to find role models. What does a good leader look like? Well, last Monday, Marge and I were in Auckland, and we had a day to spare, and so we spent it at the America's Cup Village. And there are some people who are leaders, big people in the world, and they have come to Auckland in ginormous, gigantic, huge ocean-going launches. And there in the Viaduct Basin, what used to be the Viaduct Basin, is now the America's Cup Village. There are launches like I've never seen before. These come from offshore, from owned by billionaires. And we were standing leaning over the railing on the wharf looking at this particular humongous boat. It was registered in the Cayman Islands. Now, it's a tax dodge, of course. And it's a huge boat. And I got to picturing, now this guy who's got this boat, to get the money to buy this boat, you've obviously got to be the leader of something. And knowing I was going to be talking on this, I got to thinking about it, and I thought, now here, this guy is probably the leader of a multinational corporation to get the kind of money that would be needed to buy that sort of a boat. And I thought, here is this what it means to be a good leader? Because somewhere in the world, there's a whole lot of factories and offices and so on, and there's a whole bunch of people, maybe thousands of people, are working long hours and hard work and this kind of stuff. And here's the guy who's reached the top. He's really a leader now. He's really at the top. So what does he do? has these thousands of people working for him, and he gets all these resources. He buys this humongous big yacht, comes down here so he can follow the America's Cup racing. That's the secular model of leadership. You use people to advance yourself. It's like Yertle the turtle, you know. How many turtles can I get under me? So how high can I buy? So how big can my boat be? So that I'm going touring the world and I don't have to work anymore. So all these other people work for me. And that's what, I guess, a lot of us aspire to be. If only I could be a person like that, I wouldn't have to work anymore. You know, I could tour the world doing what I want to do, and there are all these thousands of other people working for me. So where do you go to for advice? This is the problem. Because for most of us, there's a sense of kind of almost revulsion. That's not right. But where do you go to find out an alternative model of leadership? And I want to suggest to you tonight, you actually go to the teachings of Jesus. Now, some of you may be surprised by this because you think, well, what on earth would Jesus have to know about leadership? He lived in another era a long time ago and spoke a different language, and what would he know about being a leader in a modern, high-tech, interpersonal society like we live in today? Well, I want to suggest to you that he actually, what he says, has got an awful lot to speak to us today. What I want to do tonight is I want to read three passages where Jesus talked about being a leader, and then I want to talk about it and what meaning it has for us. And the first one's from Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 20 and verse 25. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave, just as the Son of Man," that's Jesus, his favorite term for himself, "just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Here's my point. This is it tonight. The rest of it is just commentary on this one point. A leader, a good leader, a leader who inspires other people, a leader who in whom people can have confidence, a really good leader is a servant. Now people think, well, that can't be true because they just trample all over you. You know, if you're a leader, the primary thing is you've got to lead. You've got to be strong and decisive and visionary and all this kind of stuff. The core thing about being a leader is to be a servant. And people will trust you in as much as they really believe you've got their well-being and not your own well-being at heart. So long as you aspire to help others fulfill themselves and not just you yourself putting all your energy in fulfilling yourself. Interestingly enough, there's an astonishing awakening that has happened in the corporate world. And a few years ago, there was a fellow who wrote a book called Servant Leadership. And you know where he got the title from. He got it from the teaching of Jesus. And much to everyone's amazement, this book became a bestseller in corporate America. And now the remarkable thing that has happened is most of the authors today who are writing about leadership and management, these are big names like Peter Drucker and Max Dupree and Ken Blanchard and these people, if you're familiar with this kind of thing. The interesting thing is, most of the authors in this area are people who are committed Christians and who write books and give big seminars for top people in the corporate world who pay big money to go and listen to these people tell them, if you want to be a leader, if you want to be a good leader, if you want to be an inspiring leader, there's one thing you need to learn. Leading is about servanthood. The interesting thing is that Jesus originally wasn't talking about being a leader in corporate America. He was talking about the lifestyle of his followers in the new community that he was forming. But what these people have realized is that what Jesus is saying is actually true. And it's a true principle of life. And it works. And whether you actually are a follower of Jesus or not, what Jesus says is true. And if people who are following you sense that this is the core of what you're about, they will have confidence in you. You know, if you're a leader and you're striding out there and you look around and there's no one following, someone said you're not a leader at all. You're merely taking a walk. And if people sense this is the core of your motivation, people might be inspired to follow. You see, the Roman Empire, when Jesus lived and when he gave his teaching, the Roman Empire was based on a whole lot of hierarchies. And depending where you were born, and what race you were, and what gender you were, and how much money you had, and how much influence you had, it determined your place in the hierarchy. And if you were born a Roman citizen, and if you were a Roman by race, and you were a male, and you had a lot of money, and you're a position of influence, you were way near the top of the pyramid. You had power. And what Jesus is saying here is that, well, look, it might be okay for them, for their political leaders. If they want to run the world like that, let them do it. This seems to me what he's saying. If they want to do that, let them do it. But if you're going to be a follower of mine, I want to tell you something. You know, no one is inspired by these people. These people who aspire to be top of a hierarchy and a pyramid structure and to control other people's lives, no one trusts them. No one loves them. But if you're going to be a follower of mine and you want to be a leader, I want you to learn something. First of all, you become a servant. You become a servant. When your motivation is not to rule or to control or to command, but to support and assist other people, just like a servant, then people can trust you. See, a lot of people who give teaching about leadership, they say that leadership is all about, you know, taking control and being in command and exercising authority and this kind of stuff. And a lot of people talk like that. Even in churches, I've heard people talk like that. You know, take authority over things. You know? But Jesus didn't talk like that. He talked about being a servant. And servants go around and they support people and they assist them and they help them. And people who are like that end up being loved and being trusted. And Jesus is saying that when you end up, as a lot of us will in our lifetime, being put in a position of leadership, here is the inner core. This does not give you a license to use the people who are under you as an opportunity to further your own reputation or power base or anything else. This gives you an opportunity, the more people there are, more and more for you to be a servant. And this is hard. It's real hard trying to do this stuff that Jesus talked about. I mean, these corporate guys may write books on it, but it's really hard. A leader is one, if we understand what Jesus is saying, a leader is one who will fall back and help the strugglers instead of striving to win the competition for power for themselves. A leader is someone who replaces the love of power with the power of love. Being a servant leader is real hard work. It's much, much easier to lead an organization in the workplace or in the church or some other place where you've ended up a leader. It is much easier to be the leader and rule by decree, like the Reverend Howitzer in the Army of God Church. It's easier. It's easier by far. You know, just do what I tell you. And a lot of people want to lead like that. Trouble is, it doesn't build trust and it doesn't build confidence. Being a servant leader is hard work. That means trying to listen to people's conflicting opinions and taking people seriously and spending hours and hours and hours with groups of people trying to work for a consensus so the whole organization can move forward together. And at times I feel envious of the Reverend Howitzer and people like that who just say, this is what we're doing, get into line or get out. You know. But it doesn't build trust. And it doesn't build confidence. It builds conflict. And you're not doing what Jesus said. And it's not being a good leader. Easier, said Jesus, being what he calls a Gentile ruler. They just lord it over them. It's interesting what he says. The rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority. You're in a position of leadership, two things not to do. Lord it over people and exercise authority over people. You know, the New Testament doesn't talk about Christian leaders ever. Never talks about Christian leaders exercising authority over other people. Did you know that? There is a cry in many sections of the church today. There is a cry that we'll have leaders who will exercise authority. And you can't find it in the New Testament. And it's a reversion to a pattern of leadership that Jesus specifically said was not to be a characteristic of those who were his followers. So if you're a leader in the youth group or a small group ministry in the church or whatever it is, or a leader in the workplace, if you want to be a good leader, if you want to inspire other people, you strive to be a servant. It's easier to rule by decree. The trouble is, it's miles more stressful. You know, because the problem, if you rule by decree, you've got to be right all the time. And it's hard being right all the time. And the trouble is that people know that you're not right all the time. And when you're a leader, like Jesus calls these Gentile leaders, who are just with the non-Jews, and you're lording it over people, it gets very, very stressful because you've got to bluff it out all the time that you're right. I've spent a lot of time in the last few years reflecting on why it is that our political leaders are now held in derision and held up to scorn, because it didn't used to be like this. And even I can remember an age when political leaders were not treated with the utter disdain that they are now, and ranked in the opinion polls down below tow truck operators in terms of confidence, this kind of thing. Have you ever wondered about this? How has this come about? Why is it that people lack confidence in our political leaders? Especially, good question to ask this week, eh? And we're going to have all their images flashed in front of us all week, each of them announcing in their own way they've got the answers for our country. And why is it that this growing, because it isn't just in New Zealand. Now, I don't know the answer to this. I can offer what I've come to feel, and I think it's the sense that they're never wrong. They're never wrong. And if only they could bring themselves to say, when they make wrong calls, as they all do, if only they could bring themselves to say, I'm sorry I got that wrong. That was a powerful testimony from Ibrani and Chris. Chris was saying that they made a mistake in their neighborhood and they fronted up to all the Muslim neighbors and they said, we got it wrong. And why can't our leaders do that? I don't know why they can't do it, but somehow or other they've read books that tells them what the kind of leadership that's needed is strong leadership that's never right. But hey, it's so stressful. It's really stressful. There's a preacher in America named John Ortberg in Chicago, and he tells a story about three men had a complex that a lot of leaders have. It was a Messiah complex. And the story has got no reference to the immediately preceding comments I made about our political leaders either. But anyway, he tells the story about three men that ended up in a psychiatric hospital, and they each believed they were the Messiah. They were like Jesus Christ. All three of them did. And the psychiatrist who was deputed to look after them wasn't sure what to do with them, and he tried this treatment and that treatment. And finally he decided he put them, the three of them, in a group together and see how they got on with each other. And this went on for a couple of years, and he said that they had amazing conversations in the group. Like one of them would say, I've been sent by God. You know, I've been sent to the world and I'm the Messiah. You know, I've come to save the world. And so the psychiatrist would say to them, well then, who told you to come and save the world? And he said, God did. At which point another person in the group would say, I did not. Ortberg makes this comments about it. Is that every leader has suffered at times from the Messiah complex, except for one. And he really was the Messiah. And it's so stressful. If you've been put in a position of leadership and you've gotten the idea that somehow or other you've got to bluff it out that you're right all the time and you're going to be strong and invincible and all this kind of stuff, you need to learn to relax and learn to understand that an authentic leader, according to the teaching of Jesus, an authentic leader is one who has the well-being of the people who are being led, mostly at heart and not their own well-being. It's a person who's a servant. You see, it's so hard. It's so hard continuing to be a leader if you've got all this stuff going through your head that what's needed is me to take charge and all this kind of stuff. I heard this story about a Sunday school teacher, and she decided that she would get the kids in her class and they would do a reenactment of the creation. And there was little boy Johnny, he was 6 and he was to be God. And so they brought in a ladder into the class, and Johnny was given a torch and he had to climb up and sit on top of the ladder, and he was God. And some of the other kids were to be trees and animals and all this kind of stuff. And she read through the account in Genesis in the Bible about the creation of the world. And so she says, you know, let there be light, and little Johnny put on the light, and then these other creepy things appeared on the ground and so on. And this was going on all right when she felt a tug on her skirt. She looked down, here was little Johnny. He said, I don't feel like being God today. Could you find someone else? And, you know, that's what it's like. If you buy into an idea of leadership, anything other than servant leadership, it gets so stressful. The second thing Jesus had to say, this is in Mark chapter 9. And this is a passage about, you know, they came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, what were you arguing about on the road? But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all. He took a little child whom he'd placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. Terrible shock for Jesus. He'd been trying to tell the disciples that if you want to be an authentic follower of mine, you act like a servant. And he overhears a conversation. They're arguing about who's going to be the greatest. It's understandable. I guess they were the foundation members of Jesus' new community, and they got into an argument about who was going to be the greatest, because that's how we think, isn't it? There's a man named Dr. Bill Zekian, and he says this, that the style of leadership, the style demands not the pride of someone who wins a competition, but the humility of someone who comes last. I'll read that again. This is the style of a leadership. The style demands not the pride of someone who wins a competition, but the humility of someone who comes last. Now, if you want to be challenged in life, you know, try living like that. Because you see, if you end up leading something, there'll be people who feed your ego and this kind of stuff. And you've got to remember all the time that you're called to be a servant. You're there to serve the needs of the people you're leading, not to serve your own needs. And then Jesus gives them such a powerful, powerful illustration of servanthood. He took a little child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. Servanthood is about giving time to people who don't count in the eyes of the powerful. It means giving time to people who cannot help you in your own advancement as a leader. It means giving time to people where there may be very little feedback for yourself. But in fact, two things happen. And Jesus takes the little child on his knee. Two things happen. The little child is blessed and encouraged. But it does something to the person who serves as well. That if we can learn to invest our lives in the lives of other people, not only are other people helped, but it does something to us as well. And that's what Jesus is talking about. No longer are we thinking how people can benefit us. And the authentic Christian community is characterized more than anything else by servanthood, and by mutual submission. One last passage on the same theme. This is where Jesus finally enacts this out to all the disciples himself. This is John 13 from verse 3. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he'd come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel round his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around them. When he'd finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I've done for you?" he asked them. "Do you call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am? Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, servants are not greater than their masters, nor are messengers greater than those who sent them. Now that you know these things, you'll be blessed if you do them." There was a habit in the days of the Roman Empire, because people wandered around, you know, in Roman sandals and so on, and when you walked around on dusty roads, your feet got very, very dirty. And so when you came to the house of an important person, that person would have a servant. And the role of the servant was to come out with a bowl of water and kneel down in front of the important guests and wash their feet. So Jesus and his disciples arrived for what was the Last Supper, the last meal Jesus was going to have. And of course, there was no servant in the house. And so these guys are sitting around with smelly, dirty feet. And it never occurs to one of the followers of Jesus. They've been following Jesus for 3 years now. They've heard all these talks from Jesus about being a servant leader, about caring for powerless people, and all this kind of stuff. It never, never occurs to any of the followers of Jesus to carry out this meaningful, menial task and go around and wash each other's feet. So they sit there with this terrible stench filling the room. And finally, Jesus gets up, he takes a bowl and a towel, and he goes around and he washes his disciples' feet. But there's something really interesting. Hello, we've lost it. If we go back to the verse, verse 3 at the beginning of the passage is a really interesting thing here, where it says Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he'd come from God and returning to God. I mean, that's astonishing. Why was this put here? It's like just a little explanatory sentence. Jesus knew that the Father had given him all power, and that he'd come from God and was going back to God. I mean, that's the ultimate statement about who Jesus really was. He'd come from God and was about to go back from God. And then it says, so. He got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. See the significance of that? It was because Jesus was God that he washed the disciples' feet. What John is saying here to us in the gospel that he wrote is this is the very character of God. That God sending his Son into the world was this astonishing act of servanthood. That God loves us so much that he sends his Son to us to hang on the cross and die. And this is the model of servanthood. You want to be a leader? You aspire to be a leader? It's a really good thing. Leadership's all about being a servant, which is very hard work. And if you want to know what makes the difference between a good leader and a bad leader, a leader who inspires other people and a leader in whom people have difficulty having confidence, this is the area that it's in. You see, a lot of people think that Jesus, you know, that God becoming a man was a bit like God was in disguise, you know, a bit like Superman and Clark Kent, you know, that if Jesus, you know, he was like Clark Kent, you know, he was God kind of dressed up in disguise, you know, and if he'd actually got off his Roman thing, there would have been a great big G on his chest, you know, and like he was, you know. But it wasn't like that. This wasn't God dressed up as a human being, but just play acting. This was the very nature of God, that God is a servant, and he comes to serve us. Story I want to close with, I read this story. It's about Pope John, the 23rd, good Pope John, who started the whole process back in the 60s of bringing the Catholic Church into the modern world. And in the Roman Curia, the group in the Vatican who kind of control the Pope's life, he had a particularly obnoxious fellow who used to come to him all the time, pointing out to him all these problems in the world and in the church. You know, Pope, you've got to address, whatever they called him, you've got to address this problem and you've got to address that problem. And finally, in some exasperation, Pope John said to him one day, he said, I know you're concerned about all these problems in the church and in the world. And I know you feel if we don't do something about it, you know, the whole place will be in a mess. But he said, I've received quite a lot of help from an angel who appears at my bedside. The Pope lived in a little cell in the Vatican with just a bed and a desk and a chair. That was all. And he said, there's this angel who appears at my bedside every so often. And the angel says to me, listen, Johnny boy, stop taking yourself so seriously. And that's the essence of a real leader. Your head is not filled with the fact that you're a leader and how wonderful this is, but your heart's full of servanthood and humility. Now here's the rub. The people who write books about leadership and so on rightly spell out, this is how you be a leader. The problem is none of us, not one of us in our normal humanity aspire to be like that. And we like to be in control. If you're given a leader and a badge and a hat or whatever, the biggest danger is it goes to your head. And so all of us who are in positions of leadership, what we need more than anything else, we need Jesus in our hearts to keep us humble and to keep us focused on what really matters and this real calling that Jesus has, that real leaders who inspire others more than anything else. Let's bow our heads in prayer. There'll be a lot of us here who are in leadership roles in various ways in society, and if you like that, you may just like to reflect for a moment on the role that you've got. And you may like to ask Jesus to come alongside you and help you to take the load that you're bearing alone. And ask him for his strength and his empowering for yourself. And ask him to give you the heart of a servant that you may lead authentically. Lord, we want to pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.